Welcome to All About Food, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Margie Lohoff, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from varying sources, which I will identify as we go along. Well, I usually start out with a food of the day, but I can't even recall what it was because there were two of them and neither of them were terribly interesting. However, since it is springtime and since some of the foods for spring are particularly interesting, especially because they may be available for just a brief amount of time, it is National Asparagus Month. And when I spotted that, I realized I had a bundle of asparagus in the refrigerator to do something with, so I decided to pursue more information about asparagus, and this is from thenibble.com. It's an interesting vegetable. Our favorite harbinger of spring, they say, has landed in the market. There are numerous spring fruits and vegetables that are eagerly awaited by food enthusiasts, but our favorite is asparagus. Fresh harvested domestic asparagus is as flavorful and affordable as it gets. And a bonus? Asparagus has just 3 calories per medium spear and contains no fat or cholesterol. It's also nutritious, a good source of calcium, magnesium, vitamin B6, and zinc, and a very good source of copper, dietary fiber, folate, iron, manganese, niacin, phosphorus, potassium, protein, riboflavin, selenium, thiamine, vitamins A and C and E, and K. So, wow, how could you turn that down? Better than taking a vitamin pill. The season runs through June, so, the writer says, dig in. And on the Nibble site, they don't cite specific writers, so I can't identify exactly who it is. Well, a brief history of asparagus. Asparagus officinalis was first cultivated more than 5,000 years ago in the eastern Mediterranean region. The oldest reference shows the spring vegetable on an Egyptian frieze dating to 3000 BC. The ancient Greeks and Romans prized asparagus for its flavor, texture, and alleged medicinal qualities. They liked asparagus so much that they dried it to enjoy after the short asparagus season ended. The oldest surviving cookbook, De Re Coquinaria, by Apicius, believed to be from the late 4th century AD, has a recipe for cooking asparagus. The vegetable gained popularity in France and England in the 16th century. King Louis XIV of France, who ruled from 1638 to 1715, enjoyed asparagus so much that he had a special greenhouse built to supply it year-round. No doubt Louis enjoyed it with hollandaise sauce, a rich sauce made from butter and eggs. The first known recipe for hollandaise was published in 1651, in a cookbook by the great French chef François-Pierre de La Varenne, who lived approximately the same amount of time as Louis XIV's reign. The recipe was for asparagus in fragrant sauce, which was his original name for what we know today as hollandaise. Early colonists brought the plant to America. Asparagus is a perennial plant raised in furrowed fields. It takes about 3 years before the plants produce spears that can be harvested. The spears are cut by hand when they reach about 9 inches in length. The delicate asparagus plant needs a temperate climate and requires much hand labor in all phases of cultivation, hence their higher cost. Well, what about white asparagus and purple asparagus? White asparagus is a special treatment of conventional asparagus, grown for its color. The spears must be grown under a layer of topsoil or in the dark without any exposure to sunlight. light would engender photosynthesis and the development of green chlorophyll. The growing technique was developed in France in the mid-1600s. If you come across fresh white asparagus and want to see if the extra cost is worth it, steam them with a bit of salt and taste their nuances before adding butter or another ingredient. You may or may not find a difference worth the money. Never buy bland, canned white asparagus. Here's more about white asparagus as well as purple, a breed that is larger, sweeter, and tastier than the conventional green types of asparagus. Purple asparagus was originally developed in Italy by farmers in the Albenga region of the Italian Riviera. It was first commercialized under the variety name Violetta d'Albenga. Purple asparagus retains its color if cooked briefly, blanching, quick sautéing, but reverts to green with prolonged cooking. That's curious. I've never seen purple asparagus in the store. And next, asparagus purchase and preparation. In buying asparagus, look for firm stalks of a uniform width and a minimum amount of woodiness at the end. It doesn't matter if they're thick or slender. Both are equally tender. But you need uniformity of size to cook them evenly. The tips should be tightly closed. Once they begin to separate, it means that the asparagus is older and won't have the best fresh flavor. If your tips have begun to wilt, soak the spears in an ice bath before cooking. Vegetables wilt when they dry out. You can restore the moisture with an ice bath. Fill a bowl with water and ice cubes. Add the vegetables, cut if you are planning to use them, and let them sit for 15 minutes or longer. Remove with a slotted spoon or tongs and drain on a cloth or paper towel, and they'll be crisp. And this is a little aside from the Nibbles article. I discovered that if I take a bundle of asparagus and set it carefully into a bowl with about an inch of water in the bottom and place it toward the back of the refrigerator, and sometimes I will enclose it with a plastic bag with a few holes popped into the top of it for ventilation, and I put it way in the back of the refrigerator so that it lessens the chance of it getting knocked over and spilling all the water. But I have found that keeps the asparagus fresh for a much longer time in the refrigerator until I can get around to using it. And I thought of that because when I bought these at HEB, they were all standing up in a trough that had a little bit of water in the bottom. So I thought, well, maybe I could do that at home. And I'm here to tell you, it did work. Well, in preparing asparagus, it can be boiled, grilled, roasted, steamed, tossed into soups and stews, and eaten raw as crudités. Most cooking instructions tell you to hold a spear of asparagus in both hands and bend until it snaps at its natural break point, which is usually 1 to 2 inches above the base. That produces rough, uneven bottoms. We simply trim them with a knife as far as the green portion goes. Other instructions tell you to peel the surface of the bottom quarter if they're woody. We haven't had this problem even with the thickest asparagus, but if you've trimmed the white bottoms and still are concerned about woodiness, here are two options. Slice a quarter-inch piece from the bottom and chew it. You'll know for sure if it will cook nicely. Trim that extra inch or so, keeping the trimmings and using them in a scramble or other recipe. And what I ended up doing with my asparagus, because I came across just then in an email from one of the cooking sites, I came across a recipe for spring vegetable pasta, garlic butter spring vegetable pasta at that. And I had all the ingredients. It called for garlic, of course, and butter. It called for pasta, and I had some dried linguine in the pantry. And then it called for asparagus and arugula, fresh. So all of those things came together beautifully, and it was a light, delicious dish. It worked out very well, and it used all these things all at one time that I didn't have to worry anymore about going bad by getting too old, either the asparagus or the arugula at least. Well, here is an article about asparagus from Life is Meals, which is a food lover's book of days. This was written by James and Kay Salter. And they say asparagus should be cooked until just barely tender, so it still has a slight bite to it when eaten. Emperor Caesar Augustus knew this to be true when he coined the phrase velocius quam asparagi cunquantur, or faster than you can cook asparagus. That's quite descriptive. Julius Caesar liked his with melted butter, while French encyclopedist Bernard Labouvier de Fontenelle was partial to oil on his favorite dish. His cook was preparing some in just that way when the Abbé Terrasson arrived unexpectedly and asked to stay to dinner. Dismayed that he would be deprived of half his asparagus, Fontenelle nevertheless ordered that the abbés be served with the white sauce he preferred. As dinner was about to be served, the abbé suddenly toppled to the floor, felled by a stroke. Fontenelle immediately took action, calling out to the kitchen, "All the asparagus with oil." So that was one way to find out that maybe he didn't have to share it after all. Well, here are some other ideas about cooking asparagus. The first one is boiling asparagus, and I'd be very careful with this. It's salted water. Gently tip in your prepared asparagus and boil for 2 minutes until they're bright green and al dente. That'll work if you take them out and lay in a single layer to cool. Top with chopped hard-boiled eggs and herbs for a light lunch, or puree with a little green garlic for a simple pasta sauce. Grilled asparagus, and I'll get into that a little later because I have one recipe for you that includes grilling. Then raw asparagus, after trimming, use a vegetable peeler to remove the skin below the spear. It says we like to slice it thinly on an angle to create ovals and add it to salads and grain bowls, but you can also peel it into delicious ribbons. Reserve the tips of the asparagus and mix them in with the rest. And then roasted asparagus, heating the oven to 400, toss prepped asparagus on a parchment-lined baking sheet with a glug of olive oil and a large pinch of salt, and roast for 5 minutes or so until crisped at the tips and slightly browned. And then akin to the boiled, you can also steam them. You can simply steam fresh asparagus at peak flavor. It's so delicious, we find it needs no embellishment. No salt, balsamic drizzle, butter, lemon juice, or other seasoning beyond a pinch of salt. It requires just a quick visit to the vegetable steamer or microwave to be ready to eat. And the editor's note is, while some people love it, we think that a vertical asparagus steamer is a waste of space. It would be one of those very specialized pieces of equipment. Well, here is the grilled rack of asparagus, and I've seen this done and it works very well. In a pot of boiling salted water, you blanch the asparagus for just 2 minutes or until crisp tender. May not even take 2 minutes if they're smaller. On a cutting board, divide the bunch into servings of 6 to 7 spears. Line up the servings in a row and run 1 6-inch wooden bamboo skewer 2 inches from the top and a second skewer 2 inches from the bottom through all the spears to create a horizontal rack. And then make a simple vinaigrette, putting some chopped shallots, some mustard, some balsamic vinegar, a little salt and pepper, any fresh herbs of your choice. Mix that all up and put them in a jar to shake well, and then grill the asparagus by brushing these racks of 6 or 7 spears all fastened together with the bamboo skewers. Brush them liberally with the vinaigrette to coat, and then grill them over a medium-high heat barbecue or grill pan for 2 to 3 minutes on each side until tender. They also develop a little bit of a char mark on them. Serve with extra vinaigrette and top with more chopped fresh herbs and lemon zest. So I hope that will inspire some of our listeners to give a little try to asparagus during this National Asparagus Month. It's a delicious and, as we discovered, an extremely nutritious vegetable. Well, our next article comes from the Wall Street Journal, And it was in the issue of Monday, October 16th of 2017. I thought you would find this interesting. It's Food Companies Revamp for a Digital World. This is written by Annie Gasparo and Heather Haddon. Big brands learn new tricks to spur impulse buys, aid search results, and drive reorders. And I'm sure we've all noticed that at H-E-B even, they have remodeled all their stores, I think all of them that I've seen anyway, to have a curbside service now. So you go online, or I guess maybe I haven't tried it, I guess you could phone order in, and I have seen inside workers with these great big carts, more than shopping carts, pulling things from the shelves in order to fill these online orders. Well, let's see what they have to say overall. As consumers increasingly shop for groceries online, giant food brands are scrambling to keep up. Consider just one small fact. Consumers who buy groceries online usually stick to a list of must-have items. That has left some big food companies scrambling to find new ways to persuade them to add that last-minute chocolate bar or bottle of water. Hershey Company, for instance, is working on a technology to make it easier for online shoppers who pick up their orders at stores to throw in a piece of candy or a pack of gum at the last minute. As customers arrive at the store and an employee prepares to bring their groceries out to their car, an offer would pop up on a smartphone app suggesting they add something extra to their order. The idea is to mimic the experience in the checkout lane, where 56% of shoppers always or often purchase a snack, the company says. Figuring out how to drive impulse purchases is just one of the challenges that multi-billion dollar food brands face as they gear up to win customers online. They also have more competition from startups on the internet, where it is possible to build a consumer following without a massive marketing budget, and where newer brands perceived as less processed and more healthful tend to be popular. As food makers and retailers test new technologies and develop e-commerce strategies to compete in this changing landscape, the overall grocery shopping experience for customers is likely to shift dramatically, food executives and analysts say. Food is changing like it's never changed before, Kroger Company chief executive Rodney McMullen told investors earlier this month. It will be anytime, anything, anywhere that they want it. Amazon.com Inc.'s recent acquisition of Whole Foods Market Inc. and its big push into the grocery industry is generating a new sense of urgency among food makers and traditional supermarkets to keep up with the e-commerce giant. Campbell Soup Company, Conagra Brands, etc., Kraft Heinz Company, and others have said they are investing more to build sales online, hiring e-commerce experts, and making adjustments to their supply chain and distribution systems to serve e-commerce needs. The stakes are high. While e-commerce represents a small segment of food and beverage sales today at about 4%, it is expected to account for 8% of such sales, or $70 billion, by 2021, according to Inmar Willard Bishop Analytics, a Chicago-area consulting firm. One big challenge for behemoth brands such as Campbell's Chicken Noodle Soup and Mondelez International Inc.'s Oreo Cookies is that they don't always have the kind of leverage online that they're used to having in brick-and-mortar stores. For decades, such brands controlled grocery store aisles, commanding prime shelf space and funding expensive advertising displays. Online, however, the playing field is more level, as the internet has provided a quick, cheap, and easy sales platform for newer, trendier food companies to reach consumers. David Ciancio, senior customer strategist for consumer data firm Dunnhumby, says that foods viewed as healthful and consumed as part of a routine, such as breakfast bars made with ingredients perceived as simple or nutritious, do better online because they are habitual and therefore ripe for automatic reordering. Processed foods and items bought on impulse, like candy, typically suffer in the transition to online, he says. Many websites have no way of presenting impulse-related food items as pop-ups when shoppers check out, and buying online doesn't offer immediate gratification. As such, online shopping lends itself to more list-driven shopping, says Paul Weitzel, vice president of Inmar Willard Bishop. Hershey CEO Michelle Buck, who took the helm in March, said on an earnings call in July that the company plans to continue working with retailers to find ways to drive impulse purchases online. "I can't tell you I have the answer to that right now," she said, "but we are doubling down on e-commerce." Some companies are looking toward new technologies to help them drive more online sales in general. One idea from InContext Solutions, which has developed virtual reality software for retailers, is to provide virtual shopping to consumers who own VR headsets. By one day enabling people to virtually unwrap candy bars and look inside boxes of cereal while they shop, the technology could make food look more appealing than on a 2D computer screen, InContext says. Elsewhere, Instacart, an online grocery delivery service that partners with many major retailers, is working with hundreds of brands ranging from large companies such as Unilever and Pepsi to smaller niche sellers to put samples of items in customers' deliveries. Mondelez, which hired a vice president of global e-commerce about a year ago, says snacks are relatively underdeveloped in e-commerce today, generating just 2% of overall online grocery sales in the U.S., 15% in China. I guess Chinese are bigger snackers, it sounds like. The company is, at least online, the company is trying a variety of strategies to drive sales online, including subscription options on Amazon, where shoppers get a lower price on products such as Belvita breakfast cookies in exchange for signing up for automatic reorders. Mondelez says it is aiming to generate at least $1 billion in e-commerce revenue by 2020, up from about a third of that now. Campbell Soup recently created an e-commerce business unit for North America and named Shaquille Farouk, a veteran of Amazon and eBay, to lead it. The company says it is working with retailers to capture more sales online and investing in a network of distribution centers in states such as Texas and Ohio to better serve e-commerce customers. It aims to generate $300 million in online sales over the next 5 years. One benefit big food companies have online is that store brands called private labels aren't as popular as they are in stores. General Mills says that in the UK, where online shopping is more prevalent, its market share is almost 30% higher for e-commerce than in physical stores. Company executives say getting products such as Cheerios cereal and Progresso soup into the customer's first online order is a priority for them because people often reorder past purchases out of convenience. General Mills says best-selling products tend to come up early in search results, though many retailers offer paid search advertising that can drive placement. In addition to paying for placement, some food manufacturers are striking partnerships with other brands to give shoppers discounts if they purchase two products together. Companies are using customer analytics to figure out if a frozen dinner buyer might also buy snack cakes, for example, says Bill Bishop, co-founder of consulting firm Brick Meets Click. There is a tremendous focus on paying to move up in search results. The question is it worthwhile, said Mr. Bishop? You have to get to the granular data. And Ms. Gasparo and Ms. Haddon are reporters for the Wall Street Journal in Chicago, and they are the ones who composed this article. Maybe eventually we'll see fresh asparagus offered online. Well, who knows? Well, moving away from that article with all of its heady information, and speaking of snacks, which of course were mentioned there as being something they're trying to drive higher in online sales, this next article is from Epicurious.com, and it was written by Joe Sevier. And happily close to our hearts, the best tortilla chips you can buy at the store. This is not online, at the store. He says, we crunched our way through 19 brands of yellow and white tortilla chips to determine the very best for guacamole, salsa, nachos, and all your other snacking needs. Can a tortilla chip be too salty? That was the hot topic on our recent taste test to find the best store-bought tortilla chips, be they yellow or white, but never blue because, listen, no one likes blue tortilla chips. This is his opinion, don't forget. The debate was sparked by one sample that proved to be divisive. Some called it bland, others called it oversalted. Upon further inspection, we could see that it was both. The problem was uneven seasoning, making one chip taste like it came straight from the depths of the briny sea, and the next chip like an unseasoned leaf of cardboard. On the other hand, our top place winner, late July organic restaurant-style tortilla chips, was thin and crispy and by all accounts perfectly salted. For our methodology and full list, then they did at a later date show what all that they had included in those 19 brands in their ranking. But this is what they had to say about their favorite tortilla chips late July, and I've never seen this in our stores here, so it may be irrelevant. These tortilla chips were shatteringly crisp. Becky Hughes called them almost delicate, but they still had sturdy structure, enough that they stayed intact inside the bag, unlike some thinner styles of tortilla chips, which were broken into pieces before you even ripped open the bag. They were pleasantly corny, according to Bon Appetit food director Carla Lally Music, offering enough flavor to stand up to whatever dip you chose to enjoy it with. I think they also have enough heft to work in a platter of nachos, although some of my colleagues thought they may be a bit too structurally unsound for that architecture. If you prefer a thicker chip, go with our runner-up, which we'll get into in a minute. But for all salsa, cheese dip, and mindless snacking endeavors, late July organic sea salt thin and crispy restaurant-style tortilla chips is the ultimate. They are available for $3.50 for an 11-ounce bag at Amazon Fresh. So I guess that would be an option since we don't have them here. But the first runner-up we do have. I buy this one all the time at HEB. The best thick tortilla chip, Santitas. A much heartier chip than late July. It's thicker and has a grainier texture. They also have a stronger corn flavor and less of an oily finish. If you like tortilla chips with a stronger presence, these will stand up to anything you throw on them, and they'll taste great doing it. It says you can buy the white corn tortilla triangles from Santitas, $2.29 for an 11-ounce bag at Amazon Fresh. However, I think HEB has these on for $2 a bag, a great deal of the time. They go on to say a little bit more that there was a lot of debate in the EPI office about whether they should taste yellow tortilla chips or white ones. The writer's stance was white. Other co-workers argued for yellow. And digital director David Tamarkin asked, is there really that much of a difference? To prove that I was indisputable right, said the writer, I brought in both kinds, but we stayed away from chips made with blue corn because, as I said before, no one likes blue tortilla chips. We also excluded multigrain and flavored from the taste test, choosing only standard salted varieties. Whenever a brand offered more than one style of chip, like scoops versus rounds, or the triangular ones, they opted for restaurant style. And the perfect chip had to be crisp without being stiff, and it had to be evenly and boldly, but not overly, salted, and to have discernible corn flavor without veering too far into earthy, muddy overtones. So, there you have it. He still thinks that the best ones have to be white. Yellow tortilla chips were routinely together, mustier tasting, he said, than the white ones, but it wasn't a clean sweep. There were yellow ones scattered through the rankings. I personally like the yellow Santitas best of all myself. So, to each his own, and everyone has their own opinions about all of that. Well, thank you for listening to today's All About Food. If you have questions or comments about the program, please call us at 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Margie Lohoff saying goodbye from Owl Radio.